We're continuing the 30th chapter of Tanya. And just to remind everybody, because this really is a continuation, we're dealing with the condition which the Alter Rebbe calls in the language of Chassidus and of Chakira, Tumtum Halev, which we kind of termed EDD, Emotional Deficit Disorder, at least on a spiritual level. And the crux of the problem or the issue is that there are certain stimuli that's supposed to evoke certain feelings or response with people. And when a person finds himself in a situation where the normative stimuli isn't working. And here's a person who's observant, shall we say, trying to serve Hashem, maybe even a Beinoni, maybe even a person who doesn't have any sins to speak of, which means he crosses every single T, he dots every single I, he's doing everything he or she is supposed to do all day long. All day long, he's doing everything. They don't miss anything. But for some reason, they're not being stimulated. They're learning Chassidus, and it's not moving them. They're coming to maybe a holy time of the year. They don't feel moved at all. And this is a problem. And remember that the book of Tanya was written by the Alter Rebbe, keeping copious notes of how he counseled people and real issues that they had. And because they had these real issues, so that's why the Alter Rebbe, in turn, developed what we would call a inspired, godly strategy of how to deal with the neshama problems that a person might have. So how do we overcome this seeming problem that the Beinoni, the aspiring Beinoni, has with regard to Timtum Halev? And the Alter Rebbe gave us a whole slew of different things or advice in the 29th chapter of Tanya. And in the 30th chapter of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe begins by saying, here's something else that he must take to heart. And the 30th chapter opens with the notion of fulfilling the dictum of our sages, v'havei shfar ruach b'fnei kol adam, that a person should be humble before all people. And when the Mishnah says havei shfar ruach, it doesn't mean I feel so humble. Well, really, I'm not so humble. But I'm going to say I'm humble. I'm going to make believe I'm humble. I'm going to pretend I'm humble, but I don't really feel humble. No. The person really, if the Mishnah says havei shfar ruach, the Mishnah didn't say pretend to be humble. The Mishnah didn't say you're humble. The Mishnah said be humble. So if the Mishnah said be humble, then really the Mishnah really expects you to be humble. And then, of course, the obvious question is, how in heaven is a person supposed to be humble b'fnei kol ha'odam, before all people? After all, certainly there are some people, in when you compare yourself to them, you don't feel not only not humble, but you feel maybe elevated. You feel like, oh, I'm way ahead of these people. I mean, look where I am. Look what I'm doing. Look where these people are. So how do we do that? So the Alter Rebbe said that this dictate of our sages, and our sages did not make jokes, and this is part of Teiras Emes, that the way to deal with that is by virtue of another saying of our rabbis. And our rabbis and sages said, do not judge somebody, pass judgment until you are in their place. As they say proverbially, till you walk a mile in their shoes. And the Alter Rebbe speaks about the fact that the person is under tremendous pressure, and that it's the makom, it's the place, the circumstances they find themselves in that ultimately cause them to stumble and to sin. And he says, you don't know about this person's yetzahara that burns like a fiery furnace and doesn't give them a moment of respite. And you might be a person who doesn't go in certain circles, who's not found in certain atmospheres, who doesn't have such a big yetzahara. And as such, who are you to put him down and judge him? Would you be in his shoes? You would probably be a lot worse. So therefore, you could be shvar ruach b'fanav. And this is, of course, how Moshe Rabbeinu was a shvar ruach. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that he was the goyel, he was the redeemer. He didn't know that he was the one who received the Torah. How could he be anav mikol adam shal pnei adam? How was he more humble than any person who walked on the face of earth? And the simple answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't a dishonest individual, chas v'shalom, lied to himself and tell himself, I didn't really do those things. It was an out-of-body experience. Somebody else went on Mount Sinai. Somebody else didn't eat and drink for 40 days. Somebody else wasn't meiser nefesh for the Jewish people. Somebody else was the one who brought them pardon after the sin of the golden calf. Chas v'shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu is emes. Moshe emes. Terase emes. It's all truth. It's all honesty. There's not a shred of anything but full integrity and sincerity. So how is Moshe humble for everybody? And the answer is very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu reflected on his high birth, on the extraordinary neshama and the many spiritual gifts he received. And he believed that if somebody had had his circumstances and somebody had been given his abilities, somebody had been given his wherewithal, it is quite possible they would do as well or maybe even better. And therefore, it could be shvar ruach b'fneim. So here's a person who's in a situation where he looks down at other people and he sees them sinning, and instead of looking down at them, he shouldn't judge them. He might be doing the same thing or maybe worse. Now, the Alter Rebbe interjects and he says, one second, that does not really exonerate the person who's doing a sin. It doesn't mean the sin is okay. Well, sin is all right because, you know, look at his circumstances. He has a big yitzhara, you know, can't blame him for sinning. Anybody would sin if he or she was in that situation. No, we can't really say that. Objectively speaking, the sin is a sin, and they had to have had the ability to contend with it. Otherwise, Hashem wouldn't put them in that situation. And if they didn't have it on their own, they could have had it through somebody else. They could have reached out to somebody and gotten the help. You know, like it's one of the things of AA that supposedly but my understanding is that you work with others, other alcoholics. When you feel weak, you call another alcoholic, another person who suffers from the same thing. And then when they feel weak, they can call you or something like that. And people have sponsors. And when you're dealing not with a therapist, but with a fellow passenger or somebody who's in the same set of circumstances, but you're having your weakness and you're low and they're having their low, so this gives them the ability to help somebody else. That means that the person will say, I couldn't do this myself. Maybe. It could be. But if you could reach out to somebody and do it that way, that's also called within your reach. So this person has what's within reach. Maybe he needs a better mashpia, he needs a better spiritual guide, he needs better friends, he needs to change his business. I don't know what it is, but he has a way. Every one of us has a way to overcome his or her challenges. It's impossible the person to say, I had no choice, I had to commit the sin. You had a choice. You made a choice. And because you made a choice, you will now have to deal with that choice. And you made the bed, you sleep in it. That's how it goes. Having said that, nobody else has the right to judge you. And this is the big difference when many, many people get confused. Many people don't realize that judgmentalness is a must, objectively speaking, but it is anathema on a subjective or individual level, which means we have to be able to pass judgment and say, this behavior is wrong. It's wrong. It's against the Torah. It's wrong. I cannot endorse it in any way, shape, or form. But just because I cannot endorse somebody's lifestyle of choice doesn't mean that I can condemn them. I could have enormous compassion. I could acknowledge that I don't know why Hashem gave them these challenges. I could say that it's tragic. It breaks my heart to see them struggle with this. But I have to still believe that Hashem gave them the koyach. And if they're not succeeding, I'm not going to say, hey, look at you, you didn't succeed. I'm going to say, if I would have that situation, I probably would be faring far, far worse. And therefore, have rachmanis on this person. And because if we use the mumbo jumbo Western version of non-judgmentalness, then we have moral equivalence. Then nothing is ever right and nothing is ever wrong. Because you know, one man's terrorist, another man's freedom fighter, chas v'shalom. Stupidity that people say. And nothing has any objective frame anymore. There is no right or wrong anymore. Which is the quagmire that the West finds itself in today. And that certainly is beyond the pale from a Torah perspective. The Torah legislates to us very, very clearly, in no uncertain terms, what is right, what is wrong, what is moral, what is immoral, what is decent, what is indecent, the kind of life we should aspire to, and the things we should avoid like the plague. And we have to know what the halacha is. And we have to make judgment calls. And have to make a decision that that's an environment I don't want to be in. And those are friends I don't want to fraternize with. Why? Because they pose a grave danger to my neshama. And I don't want to deal with that. So I'm going to remove myself. That's judgmentalness. So people say, well, we're non-judgmental. What does it mean, non-judgmental? Is this permitted on Shabbos? No, you just made a judgment call. You said, that's not permitted. Non-judgmentalness means when I see somebody doing something on Shabbos, which is inappropriate, I don't lie to myself and say, nah, it's probably okay. No, it's okay, why don't you do it? Well, you know, I don't think I should do it, but they could do it. I was once sitting with a guy who calls himself quote-unquote Orthodox, very wealthy and very arrogant, I think, person in here in the city. Because of Orthodox, you know, he's a frumid. And he said to me, what is the issue if somebody's not a Shomer Shabbat? They could do it. I mean, they can't do it any more than you could do it. You can't say, oh, you're not Shomer Shabbat? Go ahead, have the pork. I'm delighted for you to have it. I said, what do you mean? This idea of arvas. We have responsibility to each other. If something I can't do on Shabbat, you can't do it. And no other Jew is supposed to do it on Shabbat. He says, no, I'm sorry. That's wrong. That's wrong. I'm non-judgmental. I'm Orthodox, and that's my choice, but if somebody's not Shomer Shabbat, it's their choice, and I have no right to judge. I said, of course you have no right to judge them as individuals. And if you would have their circumstances, you would probably be a bigger Mechal Shabbos. But you cannot say that their behavior is okay or right. It is not a choice to be observant of Torah or not. And if you're not observant, well, you choose not to, so then you're exonerated or you're exempt. You're not part of this. That's ridiculous. That's just not true. But somehow people seem to get stuck in this nuanced point of the difference between judging a person individually, saying you are a lowlife, you're a bad person, or this action, objectively speaking, is not proper. It's not what the Torah wants. It's something we should be avoiding. I don't want to do it. I wish you had the strength. I know you do have the strength. I wish you would muster, pull your courage together and find the koyach. I'm not saying I would do better if I was you. I'd probably do much, much worse. And you say that with integrity and honesty because it's the truth. You might well do worse being in that circumstance, but doesn't make it objectively right. And here, the Alter Rebbe now takes this into the next point. So the Hebrew page number would be Lamed Chesam at Bezer, 76 on top. I'm not sure what it would be on the bottom, the English numbers. The middle of the page, the Alter Rebbe says, he begins now, after the top third of the page, really. He says, Vehine BMS, the truth is now, having said that what the person did is inappropriate, wrong, beyond the pale, something that violates Torah. But the Alter Rebbe now goes back to how and why you should not be judgmental, how and why you have no right to look down at somebody else. Do not say that they are a low life. No, they are a person who's struggling. The lowdown is that you might be lower, really lower, not in theory. And this is the chiddush, this is the novelty of what we're going to learn about this morning. Not in theory would I be in their shoes, I would walk the same way. No. In practice, I don't measure up to them. I say, what? In practice? I'm keeping the Shabbat. I'm keeping kosher. All my mezuzahs are checked. I try not to speak Lashon Hara. I try to give tzedakah every day. I'm trying to be kind and compassionate. What do you mean? This person doesn't give tzedakah any day, doesn't have a single mezuzah on his door, violates the Shabbos with impunity. Shabbos doesn't even exist on this thing. Eats at every seafood restaurant and never, doesn't even, kosher food doesn't even pass his lips unless he gets invited to one. I'm supposed to be, look myself lower than that person? Like, that makes no sense. The Alter Rebbe now explains to you how it does make sense. Not because if I would be in their shoes, I might do worse, but because me, in my present situation, I'm not necessarily serving Hashem with any greater fervor or passion or devotion or commitment or loyalty than they are. How's that possible? Listen to this. V'hine, b'emes, in truth, shehi milchama g'deila v'atzuma. The truth is that when a person is caught in the thicket of the struggle with the animal soul, with the Yetzer Hara, the truth is that it is an enormous war. It's a battle. It's a conflict of extraordinary proportion. Lishboir ha-yetzer, to break the Yetzer Hara, ha-boyer ke-esh lo-hava, mipnei pachad Hashem. You have this Yetzer Hara that burns like a furnace, a fiery yearning and cravings you can't imagine. And you're supposed to be able to shut that down. Shut that down. How do I shut that down? Because I have pachad Hashem. I'm in awe of God, and because I have this reverence for God, I'm going to shut down this craving and desire. So this could be actually like a test. So we talked about a concept of a test. Avraham Avinu had 10 tests, and it was these tests that made him great, and these tests that revealed his spiritual mettle and his courage, and it was these tests that forged Avraham. He was forged, if you will, in the kiln of the fire of these tests, and Avraham Avinu overcame all the tests, and many of us don't overcome our tests. But somebody who fails at a test cannot be judged. I'll give you a simple example that everybody here can relate to. You meet a Holocaust survivor who went through unimaginable horrors, literally, and the person has no faith, doesn't believe in Hashem. And you say to them, how could you not believe in God? What will be with Yiddishkeit? Do you not care about 3,700 years of tradition? I understand you saw your mother's guts ripped out. I understand your father took 6 bullets in the head in front of your face. I understand the little baby was thrown into the fire in front of your face. I understand. Of course you don't understand, but you say stupid things like that. Oh, I understand you were in Auschwitz for you. I understand. But still, faith, faith. No normal person that I know, I mean, there may be somebody out there, no normal person that I know would have the chutzpah and the insolence to say something like that. What would you say to a person like that? I can't have no words. I can't say anything to you. You're right. I don't know how one could. I can't judge you. Can't judge you. Who knows if I have gone through that? The fact that there are other Holocaust survivors who went through the same or worse and came out with their faith fortified, they could talk to them. That's why, Rabbi Nissim Mangel's famous story is, he meets this guy selling shirts on a Friday afternoon, and he tells the guy, you gotta go for Shabbos. The guy said, what Shabbos? There's no God. And the guy rolls up his sleeves to show numbers, and Rabbi Mangel rolls up his sleeve, and he says, tell me where you were that I wasn't. A boy in Auschwitz. A boy. 9-year-old boy in Auschwitz. Unfathomable. So a person like that can speak to somebody else like that. He has the right to speak to him. None of us would think that we have the right to speak and lecture to such a person. You shut your mouth. There's nothing to say. Why? Because who are you to... Doesn't mean I don't believe in Hashem. It doesn't mean I don't believe. I said, Al Tevieno Dinasoyim, please God, don't test me. Don't put me in that situation. I don't want to have to be tested. Like, I don't know if I would be able to maintain equilibrium. I don't know if I would be able to maintain faith. I don't know. So a normal person understands this. No normal person will go over to the Holocaust survivor and say, I believe in God, and therefore I want to tell you that what your life you're leading is wrong, and it's shame on you. Alter Rebbe says, the truth is that every single sinner, on some level, is in a place that you don't understand. You don't know what they're going through. And because you don't know what they're going through, you have no right to sit in judgment about them. You say, you are a lowlife. Says who? What they're doing is low, what they're doing is inappropriate, what they're doing may be vile and disgusting. However, who says you're doing any better now? Who says I'm doing better now? Yeah. They have an assailant. They have an unbelievable test. And you're saying you should be passing your test. You should be overcoming Yetzirah. To which the Alter Rebbe says, tell me something. Are you overcoming your Yetzirah? Are you battling with your demons? Are you overcoming your own craving, yearnings, and desires? The person says, what do you mean? Of course I am. I'm observant Jew. Daven every day. I get stuck every day. I'm eating kosher every day. Of course. Really, the Alter Rebbe says? Tell me, do you have cravings for cheeseburgers in the morning? Or that's not, no, I don't deal with that. Is it hard? Is it a terrible, sort of wrestling match every morning to daven where you feel so angry at God and you have to work on it and finally bring yourself? No, not really. It comes naturally. Are you kidding? I'm doing this for years. This is easy for me. Oh, it's easy for you. And when you give tzedakah, is it like the hardest thing in the world to part with the quarter or the 50 cents or the loonie? No, it's not a big deal. It's not nothing. So the Alter Rebbe says, so then how can you judge him? You're not fighting with your Yetzirah. You're not locked really in a serious conflict. You're not really, in your Avodas Hashem, you're not really that loyal and that committed and dedicated because you're not mustering every ounce of strength. You don't have to. Lucky you. But at the same time, you can't judge that person. In other words, when we speak about perfection in Avodas Hashem, we speak specifically about what level of commitment are you demonstrating at this point, right now. What level of commitment are you demonstrating? How hard is it for you, and how hard are you fighting for what's right and what's good? So if you have a person who is serving Hashem perfectly, perfectly, doing all the things they're supposed to do, all the things. There's a Shulchan Aruch, no problem. There's I's, there's T's, they're crossed, they're dotted. Everything's being done. But this person does not have a Melchama Atzuma on their hands. They don't have a huge battle on their hands. They don't have any terrible cravings to do something that the Torah says is prohibited. The things that they want and need, more or less, are available for them in a kosher way. And therefore, this Kal Shebekalim, this lightweight, spiritual lightweight, or lowlife, as you might call him, who's doing things which you can't even imagine. That's terrible, the sins that this person is doing. Who are you to judge them? And so, why, not only because if you would be in that situation, it'd be worse, because you're not serving Hashem either. I'm not serving Hashem? Yeah, you're not serving Hashem. You're going through the motions. You're not fighting with Yetzirah. You're not locked in any kind of serious conflict. So you're saying he doesn't serve Hashem. He should be serving Hashem. He should be overcoming his Yetzirah. He should be... And the answer to the person is, yeah, you should be serving Hashem too. You should be serving Hashem too. You're so quick to lecture, this person isn't working hard at Avodas Hashem. Neither are you. And the Alter Rebbe says it may not be that he's doing anything wrong. You may talk about a person who does everything right. However, when we speak from the vantage point or perspective of doing good stuff, behaving appropriately, following the path of that which is righteous, that which the Torah legislates. Let's start with an easy one, right? Well, maybe not. Avodas HaTefillah. davening. Bikavona. Bikavona. Let's help us understand the word kavona. In Hebrew, when you take aim, like a sharpshooter, it's called lechaven. Do you know that when sharpshooters, I only know this in the Israeli army because I was like one of these tours, do you know that when they find a place and they conceal themselves and they put the paint on and they put the twigs in their helmet and whatever else, they dress up like a tree, do you know that they sit there sometimes for 8 hours with intense concentration? They cannot waver for 1 second because they don't know who's going to infiltrate, especially imagine on the Gaza border. One of these monsters comes across. One monster. It means five dead Jews, Rahman al-Hassan. And the sharpshooter's job is to pick out that one guy. And you can't pick out the wrong person. And you have no, there's no margin for error. You know what kind of responsibility these kids have? These are kids, they're 21, 22 years old. Unbelievable responsibility. And they're shooting from 500 yards away, 1,000 yards away. And you have to hit the person exactly. Because otherwise it could be fire that's gonna kill somebody else that shouldn't have been hurt. Do you know how intense the focus is? You know that they don't even go to the washroom, these people. They go like with a can, if they have to use the washroom, because you can't disclose your location. They go under the cover of dark, and they're covered over, and you really don't know where they are. And they have to sit there, and they focus. They don't lose their waiver for 1 second. They cannot, it's like kids doing this. You imagine davening like that, just for an hour. Just for 1 hour. Mind shouldn't waver, mind shouldn't wander. You should be absolutely 100% focused on what you're doing. That's called kavana. Imagine that. How many people do that? How many people daven that way? Lishpach nafshe lifnei Hashem. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about pouring your soul forth before God, because that's what prayer is really supposed to be. You're supposed to pour forth in prayer b'chol koichei mamash, with every ounce of strength, ad mitzui hanefesh, till the point of exhaustion. We know how to dance to the point of exhaustion. We know how to have fun until the point of exhaustion. We know how to eat till the point of exhaustion. We do very good at these things. How about davening to the point of exhaustion? Imagine that. Imagine davening to the point that I'm spent. Exhausted. Does anybody do that? But that's Avodas Hashem. That's what davening actually is supposed to be. So when the person feels so good about themselves because they said every word. No, the other people don't even say the words. They just knock off davening. They just turn the pages and mumble lips. I'm saying all the words. Ha, I'm such a tzaddik. Really? And how was your thought process? Were you focused on Hashem every moment? For 1 hour, did you focus on God? For 45 minutes? Okay, fine, a half hour. Did you fight your Yetzirah? Well, not really. It was no. Well, it happened. I went through the motions. Aha. So you went through the motions. So if you went through the motions and you didn't fight your Yetzirah, then how are you? So how are you so quick to judge that person and say, I can't believe they don't fight the Yetzirah? What a chutzpah. I'm here fighting the Yetzirah. I'm here being such a high and mighty, perfect Orthodox Jew, and they're doing all these Avedas. And you say to them, yeah, but they have a big Yetzirah. So fight your Yetzirah. Fight him. Slay your dragons. And Alter Rebbe says, tell me, did you slay your dragons? Because you're so quick to point out that you should. The radio is trying to get through. We've got to go to the radio. But the bottom line is, this is the notion of how Alter Rebbe says we could be humble by looking at anybody. Because we are charged with the responsibility to fight with the animal soul. Don't think that the Yetzirah is happy when you daven. And the animal soul says, all right, is it over yet? Knock it off, move on, life is busy. And you have a melchama atzuma. You do have a battle on your hands. Say, well, I don't have those cravings. I'm not running to eat this or do that. Yeah, but your Yetzirah, he knows he's not gonna get you to do those things. He just gets you not to daven like a mensch. That's what it's focused on. And how are you doing with that? Are you fighting your Yetzirah? Are you in a... And the answer is, if you're not fighting your Yetzirah, then how in heaven could you make judgment on somebody else? Say, they don't fight, they're Yetzirah. To be continued.